My voice comes out as a broken whine, and I'm convinced that my mind hasn't caught up with the fact that Landon is the person saying these things to me. I thought you were on our side? I ask, simply because I have to. I have to know if it's truly as hopeless as it seems. He takes a deep breath and releases it.
I'm sorry, too, but tonight was too much. My mom being pregnant and Ken trying to fix things with Harden, me moving, it's too much. This is our family, and it needs to come together. You aren't helping that.
I'm sorry, I repeat, because I don't know what else to say. I can't argue with him. I can't even disagree with him because he's right. This is their family, not mine. No matter how much I try to pretend that it's my family, I'm disposable here. I've been disposable in every place that I've tried to settle since I left my mother's house. He stares down at his feet, and I can't seem to look away from his face as he says,
I know you are. I'm sorry for being a jerk, but I had to say it.
Yeah, I understand. He still doesn't look at me. It won't be like this in New York, I promise. I just need some time. I'm so confused about everything in my life, and I can't seem to make sense of anything. The feeling of not being wanted somewhere when you aren't sure how to leave is one of the worst feelings. It's so incredibly awkward, and you take a few seconds to try to assess the situation to make sure you aren't just being paranoid. But when my best friend won't look at me after telling me that I'm causing problems with his family, the only family I have, I know it's true. Landon doesn't want to talk to me right now, but he's too nice to say it. New York. I swallow the lump in my throat. You don't want me to come anymore, do you?
It's not that. I just thought New York was going to be a fresh start for both of us, Tessa, not just another place for you and Harden to fight.
I get it. I shrug and dig my fingernails into my palms to stop myself from crying. I do get it. I understand completely. Landon doesn't want me to go to New York with him. I didn't have a solid plan anyway. I don't have much money or an acceptance letter to NYU yet, if ever. Until now, I didn't realize how ready I was to move to New York. I needed this. I needed to at least try to do something spontaneous and different, and I needed to jump out into the world and land on my own 2 feet.
I'm sorry,
he says, lightly kicking at the leg of the chair to shift the focus from his words. It's okay. I understand. I force a smile at my best friend and manage to make it up the stairs before the tears flow freely down my cheeks. In the guest room, the bed feels solid underneath me, holding me in place while my mistakes are laid out in front of my eyes. I have been so selfish, and I haven't even realized it until now. I have ruined so many relationships in the past 8 months. I started college in love with my Noah, my childhood boyfriend, only to cheat on him more than once with Harden. I made friends with Steph, who betrayed me and tried to hurt me. I judged Molly when she wasn't even the one I should have been worried about. I forced myself to believe that I could fit in at college, that this group of people were actually my friends, when in reality, I was a joke to them. I fought and fought to keep Harden. I fought for his acceptance from the start. When he didn't want me, I only wanted him more. I fought with my mother to defend Harden. I fought with myself to defend Harden. I fought with Harden to defend Harden. I gave my virginity to him as part of a bet. I loved him and cherished that moment, and he was hiding his motives from me all along. Even after what he did, I stayed, and he always came back with an apology even bigger than the last. It wasn't always him, though. While his mistakes held more depth, more pain, mine were just as frequent. Out of pure selfishness, I used Zed to fill the void nearly every time Harden left me. I kissed him, I spent time with him, I led him on. I held my friendship with him over Harden's head, knowingly continuing the game that the two of them had started all those months ago. I have forgiven Harden so many times, only to throw his mistakes back in his face. I always expected too much from him, and I never let him forget it. Harden is a good man, despite his flaws. He's such a good man, and he deserves to be happy. He deserves everything. He deserves quiet days with a loving wife who doesn't have to struggle to give him children. He doesn't deserve games and bad memories. He shouldn't have to try to live up to some ridiculous expectation I've set for him that is nearly impossible to meet. I have been through hell and back in the last 8 months, And now here I sit, on this bed, alone. I've spent my entire life planning and scheduling, organizing and anticipating, yet here I am with nothing but mascara-stained cheeks and broken plans. Not even broken. None of them ever had enough backing in the first place to end up broken. I don't have a clue where my life is headed. I don't have a college to be in, a place to belong in, or even the romantic notion of love from the books I've always loved and used to believe in. I have no idea what the hell I'm doing with my life. So many breakups, so many losses. I had my father come back into my life, only to be slain by his own demons. I've watched as Hardin's entire life was revealed as a lie, and his mentor revealed as his biological father, whose long history with his mother drove the man who raised him to drink. His childhood torment was for nothing. He went through years of dealing with an alcoholic for a father, and he witnessed things as a child that no one should ever have to. I have watched from the beginning Hardin's attempts to reconnect with Ken, from my first meeting the man outside a yogurt shop to becoming part of this family and watching as Hardin struggled to forgive him his mistakes. He's learning to accept his past and forgive Ken, and it's incredible to see. He has been so angry his entire life, and now that he's finally getting some peace in his life, I can see this for what it is. Hardin needs this peace. He needs resolve. He doesn't need constant backtracking and constant turmoil. He doesn't need doubts and arguments. He needs family. He needs his friendship with Landon and his relationship with his father. He needs to accept his place in his family and be able to enjoy the thrill of watching his family expand. He needs Christmas dinners full of love and laughter, not tears and tension. I've watched him change so much since the day I met the rude, tattooed boy with the piercings and the messiest hair I had ever seen. He's not that boy anymore. He's a man now. A man recovering. He doesn't drink the way he used to. He doesn't break things as often. And he stopped himself from hurting Landon. He's managed to build this life around him, full of people who love and cherish him, while I've managed to destroy every relationship I thought I had. We fought and we battled. We won and we lost. And now my friendship with Landon has become just another casualty of Hardin and Tessa. As soon as I've thought his name, like he's some kind of genie I can summon, Hardin opens the door, strolling in calmly while he rubs a towel over his wet hair.
"What's going on?"
he asks. But as soon as he sees my state, the towel is quickly discarded and he darts across the room to kneel before me. I don't try to mask my tears. I don't see the point. "We are Catherine and Heathcliff," I proclaim, devastated by the truth. Hardin frowns.
"What? What the hell happened?"
"We have made everyone around us miserable, and I don't know if I just didn't notice or I was too selfish to care, but it happened. Even Landon has been affected by us."
"Where is this coming from?"
Hardin stands.
"Did he fucking say something to you?"
"No." I pull Hardin by the arm, begging him not to go downstairs. He only said the truth. I see it now. I was just trying to force myself to see it, but now I get it. I wipe my fingers under my eyes and take a breath to continue. "You aren't the one who was ruining me. I did it myself. I changed and you changed, but you changed for the better. I did not." Saying it out loud makes it easier to accept. I'm not perfect. I never will be. And that's okay. But I can't drag Hardin down with me. I have to fix what is wrong inside me. It isn't fair to want that from Hardin without doing it myself. He shakes his head, staring at me with those beautiful emerald eyes.
"You're talking crazy. None of this makes any sense."
"Yes." I stand and tuck my hair behind my ears. It's completely clear to me. I am trying to stay as calm as I can, but it's hard, because he doesn't get it, and it's so clear. How does he not get it? "I need you to do something for me. I need you to promise me something right now," I beg.
"What? Hell no. I'm not promising anything, Tessa. What the fuck are you going on about?"
He reaches under my chin and gently lifts my head to him. His other hand wipes at the moisture covering my face. "Please, promise me something. If we could ever have a chance of a future together, you have to do something for me."
Fine. Fine.
He quickly agrees. I mean it. I am begging you. If you love me, you will listen to me and do this for me. If you can't, we will never have a future, Harden. I don't mean the words as a threat. They are a plea. I need this from him. I need him to understand and to heal and to live his life while I try to fix mine. He swallows. His eyes meet mine, and I know he doesn't want to agree, but he says anyway,
"Okay, I promise."
"Don't follow me this time, Harden. Stay here and be with your family and..."
"Tessa."
He cups my face with his hands resting under my jaw.
"No, stop this. We will figure this New York shit out. Don't overreact."
I shake my head. I'm not going to New York, and I promise you that I'm not overreacting. I know this seems dramatic and impulsive, but I promise it's not. We have both been through so much in the last year, and if we don't take a little time to make sure this is what we want, we will end up taking everyone down with us, even more so than we already have. I try to make him understand. He has to understand.
"How long?"
His shoulders slump and his fingers brush his hair back. "Until we know that we're ready. I feel more resolute than I have in the last 8 months."
"Know what? I already know what I want with you."
"I need this, Harden. If I can't get myself together, I would resent you and myself. I need this."
"Fine. You can have it. I'm giving this to you, not because I want to, but because this will be the last doubt I will ever entertain from you. After I give you this time and you come back to me, that's it. You aren't leaving me again, and you will marry me. This is what I want in return for this time you need."
"Okay. If we make it through this, I will marry this man." Chapter 63. Tessa. Harden kisses my forehead and closes the passenger door of my car. My bags have been packed for the thousandth and last time, and Harden is leaning against the car now, bringing me to his chest.
"I love you. Please remember that,"
he says,
"and call me the second you get there."
He isn't happy about this, but he will be. I know this is right. We need this time for ourselves. We are so young, so confused, and we need this time to repair some of the damage that has been done in the people's lives around us. "I will. Tell them bye for me, remember?" I lean into his chest and close my eyes. I'm not sure how this will end, but I know it's necessary.
"I will. But get in the car, please. I can't draw this out and pretend that I'm happy about it. I'm a different person now, and I can cooperate, but much longer, and I'll want to drag you back into that bedroom for all time."
I wrap my arms around Harden's torso, and he rests his arms around my shoulders. "I know you are. Thank you."
"I love you, Tessa. So fucking much. Remember that, okay?"
he says into my hair. I can hear his voice breaking, and the need to protect him starts to claw its way into my heart again. "I love you, Harden. Always." I press my palms against his chest and lean up to kiss him. I close my eyes, wishing, wanting, hoping that this won't be the last time I feel his lips against mine, that this won't be the last time I ever feel this way. Even now, through the sadness and pain of leaving him here, I feel the constant pulse of electricity between us. I feel the soft curve of his lips and the burn of need for him, then the desire to change my mind about this and continue living in the cycle. I feel the compulsion that he holds over me, and I over him. I pull away first, memorizing the low groan he makes when I do, and kiss his cheek. "I'll call you when I get there." I kiss him once more, just a small, quick goodbye kiss, and he runs his hands over his hair when he steps away from the car.
"Be safe, Tess,"
Harden says as I climb into the car and close the door. I don't trust myself enough to speak, but finally, as my car pulls away from the house, I whisper, "Bye, Harden." Chapter 64. Tessa. June. Am I okay? I turn around before the full-length mirror, tugging at my dress, which hits right at the knees. The maroon silk has a nostalgic feel to it underneath my fingers. The moment I tried the dress on, I fell in love with the way the material and color reminded me of my past, of a time when I was someone else. Do I look okay? The dress is different from its earlier version. That dress was loose-fitting and high-collared with three-quarter-length sleeves. This dress is form-fitting and has a slightly lower collar with a cut-out pattern across the neckline and lax sleeves. I will always love that old dress, but I'm happy with the way this dress fits me now.
Of course you do, Teresa. My mother leans against the doorway with a smile.
I've tried to calm my nerves in preparation for today, but I've drunk 4 cups of coffee, eaten half a bag of popcorn, and paced around my mother's house like a madwoman. Hardin's graduation. I'm slightly paranoid that my company will be unwelcome, that the invitation was made out of politeness, only to be silently taken back in the time we've been separated. The minutes and hours have ticked by somehow, in the same way they always have and always will. But this time, I'm not trying to forget him. This time, I'm remembering and healing and thinking back on my time with Hardin with a smile. That night in April, the night that Landon handed me a reality check on a silver platter, I drove straight to my mother's house. I called Kimberly and cried into the phone until she told me to suck it up, stop crying, and do something about the direction my life was headed in. I hadn't realized just how dark my life had become until I started to see light again. I spent the first week in complete solitude, barely leaving my childhood bedroom and forcing myself to eat. Every single thought I had revolved around Hardin and how much I missed him, needed him, loved him. The next week was less painful, as it was in the past during our breakups, but this time was different. This time I had to remind myself that Hardin was in a better place with his family, and I wasn't leaving him to fend for himself. He had his family, if he needed anything. The daily calls from Karen were the only thing that kept me from driving back there to check on him 100 times. I needed to get my life together, but I also needed to be sure I wasn't doing more damage to Hardin's life, or anyone else's around me. I had become that girl, the one that burdens everyone around her, and I didn't realize it, because Hardin was all I could see. His opinion of me was the only thing that seemed to matter, and I spent my days and nights trying to fix him, fix us, while breaking everything else, including myself. Hardin was persistent the first 3 weeks, but just like Karen's daily calls, his lessened and lessened in frequency until I was only getting 2 calls a week between the two of them. Karen assures me that Hardin is happy, so I can't find it in myself to be upset that he doesn't keep in touch as much as I wanted or hoped that he would. I keep in touch with Landon the most. He felt terrible the morning after saying all those things to me. He came to Hardin's room to apologize to me, only to find Hardin alone and pissed off. Landon immediately called me, begging me to come back and let him explain, but I assured him that he was right and I needed to stay away for a while. As much as I wanted to go to New York with him, I needed to go back to where the destruction of my life began and start over, alone. Landon's reminder that I wasn't a part of their family hurt me the most. It made me feel unwelcomed, unloved, and unattached to anything or anyone. I felt like it was just me, untethered, floating around trying to latch myself onto anyone who would take me. I had become too dependent on others and was lost inside the cycle of wanting to be wanted. I hated that feeling. I hated it more than anything else, and I understand that Landon made that statement out of anger alone, but he wasn't wrong. Sometimes anger breaks through to things we're really feeling.
Daydreaming won't help you get out of the door any faster.
My mother walks toward me and pulls open the top drawer of my jewelry box. Dropping a pair of small diamond studs in my palm, she closes her hand around mine.
Wear these. It won't be as bad as you think. Just keep yourself composed and don't show any weakness.
I laugh at her attempt to comfort me and push the back onto the second earring. Thank you. I smile at her reflection in the mirror. And she, being Carol Young, suggests that I pull my hair back away from my face, add more lipstick, wear higher heels. I kindly thank her for her advice, though I don't follow it, and silently thank her again when she doesn't push her suggestions further. My mother and I are on the path to the relationship I always dreamed we would have. She's learning that I am a woman, young but capable of making my own decisions, and I'm learning that she never intended to become the woman she is now. She was broken by my father all those years ago, and she never recovered. She's working on that now, sort of in a parallel way to how I am. I was surprised when she told me that she had met someone and has been dating for a few weeks now. The biggest surprise of all was that the man, named David, is not a lawyer, not a doctor, and doesn't drive a luxury car. He owns a bakery in town, and he laughs more than anyone else I've ever met. He has a 10-year-old daughter who has taken a strong liking to trying on my clothes, which are far too big on her small frame, and to letting me practice my slowly developing makeup and hairdressing skills on her. She's a sweet girl named Heather, and her mother passed away when she was 7. The biggest surprise of all is how sweet my mother is to that girl. David brings something out in my mother that I have never before seen, and I adore the way she laughs and smiles when he is around. How much time do I have? I turn to my mother and step into my shoes, ignoring the way she rolls her eyes when I choose the lowest-heeled ones in my closet. I am already a nervous wreck. The last thing I need to add to my anxiety is walking in heels.
5 minutes if you want to arrive early, which I know you do.
She shakes her head and pulls her long blonde hair to one shoulder. It's been an amazing and emotional experience to watch the shift in my mother, to watch some of the stone crack, and to watch her become a better version of herself. It's nice to have her support today, especially today, and I am thankful that she has kept her opinion of my going to the ceremony to herself. I hope traffic isn't bad. What if there's a wreck? The 2-hour drive could easily turn into 4 hours, and my dress will be wrinkled, and my hair will be flat, and... My mother cocks her head to one side.
You will be fine. You're overthinking things. Now apply some lipstick and get on the road.
I sigh and do exactly what she says, hoping that everything will go as planned, for once.
Chapter 65. Harden. I groan, staring at the hideous black gown in the mirror. I'll never understand why I'm being forced to wear this shit. What's wrong with wearing normal clothes during the ceremony? My street clothes would already be color-coordinated with the mass of black anyway. The dumbest fucking shit I've ever worn in my life, hands down. Karen rolls her eyes at me. Oh, come on, just wear it. Pregnancy is making you a lot less tolerable. I tease her, and move out of the way before she can smack my arm. Ken has already been at the Colosseum since 9 this morning. He will be so proud to see you dressed in this gown and walking across the stage. She smiles as her eyes gloss over. If she cries, I'm going to need an exit. I'll just slowly walk out of the room and hope her vision is too blurry for her to follow. You make it sound like I'm going to prom, I grumble, adjusting the stupid material that is swallowing my entire body. My shoulders are tense, my head is throbbing, my chest is burning in anticipation. Not because of the ceremony or the diploma. I couldn't give a shit less about either of those. The overwhelming anxiety stems from the possibility that she might be there. Tessa is the only reason behind my putting on this show for everyone. She is the one who convinced, well, conned, me into going in the first place. And if I know her as well as I know I do, she'll be there to witness her triumph. Though her calls have become less and less frequent, and her texts have become practically non-existent, she will come today. An hour later, we are pulling into the parking lot of the Colosseum, where the graduation is being held. I agreed to ride with Karen after the 90th time she asked me. I would have preferred to drive myself, but she's been clingy lately. I know she's trying to compensate for Tessa's departure from my life, but nothing will fill that gap. Nothing and no one would ever provide what Tessa has provided for me. I will always need her. Everything I do, every single day since she left me, is only to be better for her. I've made some new friends. Okay, 2 friends. Luke and his girlfriend, Casey, are the closest things I have to friends. And they are okay company. Neither of them drinks much, and they definitely don't come close to spending their time at shitty parties or making bets. I met Luke who is a few years older than me and being dragged to couples therapy once a week, during my weekly session with Dr. Tran, mental health professional extraordinaire. Okay, not really. He's a scam artist I pay $100 an hour to listen to me talk about Tessa for 2 hours a week. But it does make me feel better, talking to someone about all this shit inside my head. And he's decent at listening to me.
Landon said to remind you that he's really sorry that he couldn't make it. He's so busy in New York.
Karen tells me as she pulls into the parking space.
I promised him that I would take a lot of pictures for him today.
Yay. I smile at Karen and climb out of the car. The building is packed, the stadium-style seats filled with proud parents, relatives, and friends. I nod at Karen when she waves to me from her seat in the front. Being the wife of the Chancellor gives some advantages, I guess. Like front-row seats to a fun-filled graduation. I can't help but attempt to find Tessa in the crowd. It's impossible to see half the faces, because the damn lights are so bright and blinding and excessive. I would hate to see how much this extravagant ceremony is costing the university. Finding my name on the seating chart, I smile at the grumpy woman who is in charge of seating. She's annoyed, I'm guessing, because I missed the rehearsal. But really, how complicated could this shit possibly be? Sit, name called, walk. Take worthless piece of paper, walk, sit back down. Of course, when I do sit down in my place, the plastic seat is uncomfortable, and the guy next to me is sweating like a damn whore in church. He's fidgeting, humming to himself, and shaking his knee. I almost want to say something, until I realize I'm doing the exact same thing, minus the disgusting sweat. I'm not sure how many hours have passed. It feels like 4, when my name is finally called. It's awkward and vomit-inducing, the way everyone is staring at me, and I rush off the stage as soon as I notice Ken's eyes starting to tear up. I just have to make it through the rest of the alphabet until I can go and find her. By the letter V, I think I may just stand from my seat and interrupt the entire thing. How many people can possibly have a last name starting with V? Apparently a lot. That's how many. At last, after I've travelled through multiple states of boredom and the climactic cheering has gone down, we are able to leave our seats. I practically jump from mine, but Karen rushes to me for a hug. After what feels like an appropriate amount of my tolerance expended, I excuse myself from Karen's weeping congratulations speech and rush off to find her. I know she's here. I can feel it somehow. I haven't seen her in 2 months. 2 fucking long-ass months. And I am buzzing high on adrenaline when I finally spot her near the exit. I had a feeling she would do this. Come here and try to sneak off before I could find her. But I won't allow it. I'll chase her car down the street if need be.
Tessa!
I push through the huddled families in my way to get to her, and she turns around just as I sort of shove a young boy out of the way. It's been so long since I've seen her that the relief is overwhelming. So fucking overwhelming. She looks as beautiful as ever. Her skin has a tan glow that it didn't have before, and her eyes are brighter, happier, and the shell that she had become has been replaced by life. I can tell all of this just by looking at her.
Hey.
She smiles and does that thing where she tucks her hair behind her ear when she's nervous.
Hey.
I repeat her greeting and take a few moments to just take her in. She's even more angelic than my memory of her. She seems to be doing the same thing I am, and I watch as she looks me up and down. I wish I weren't wearing this stupid cloak thing. Then she could see how much I've been working out. She speaks first.
Your hair is so long.
I laugh softly and push my fingers through the mess. It's probably all fucked up from that cap. Right then I realize I don't know where the damn thing went. But who knows? And who cares?
Yeah, yours is too,
I say without thinking. She laughs and brings her fingers to her mouth. I mean, your hair is long. It's always been long, though. I try to recover, but it only makes her laugh again. Smooth, Scott. Really fucking smooth.
So, was the ceremony as bad as you expected?
She asks. She's standing less than 4 feet away from me, and I wish we were sitting down or something. I feel like I need to sit down. Why am I so fucking anxious? Worse. Did you see how long it was? The man reading off the names was ancient. I hope that she smiles again. When she does, I smile back at her and push my hair away from my face. I do need a haircut, but I think I may keep it this way for a while.
I'm really proud of you for walking. I'm sure Ken is so happy.
Are you happy?
She crinkles her brow. For you? Yes, of course. I'm very happy that you walked. It's okay that I came, isn't it?
She looks down at her feet for only a second before focusing her eyes on mine. Something about her is different. More confident, more, I don't know, strong? She's standing up straight. Her eyes are sharp and focused. And even though I can tell she's nervous, she's not intimidated like she used to be. Of course it is. I would have been quite pissed if I walked for nothing. I smile at her, then again at how the two of us seem to be doing nothing but smiling and fidgeting with our hands. How are you? I'm sorry that I haven't called much. I've been really busy. She shakes her head at me.
It's okay. I know you have a lot going on with graduation and preparing your future. All of that.
She smiles a barely there smile.
I've been well. I applied to every college within a 50-mile radius of New York City.
You're still wanting to go there? Landon said you weren't sure yesterday.
I'm not yet. I'm waiting to hear back from at least one college before I relocate. Transferring to the Seattle campus hurt my record. The admissions department at NYU said that it made me seem flaky and unprepared, so I'm hoping that at least one of the colleges there will disagree. Otherwise, I am going to take classes at a community college until I can transfer back into a 4-year.
She takes a deep breath.
Wow, that was a long explanation to a short question.
She laughs and steps out of the way of a sobbing mother walking hand in hand with her gown-clad daughter.
Did you decide what you want to do next?
Well, I have some interviews set up over the next few weeks.
That's good. I'm really happy for you.
None of them are here, though. I watch her face closely as she takes in my words.
Here? As in this town?
No, as in Washington.
Where are they, if you don't mind me asking?
She's composed and polite, and her voice is so soft and sweet that I have to take a step closer to her. One in Chicago, 3 in London.
London?
She tries to hide the surprise in her voice, and I nod. I didn't want to have to tell her this, but I was just taking advantage of every opportunity that came my way. I probably wouldn't move back there anyway. I'm just exploring my options. I wasn't sure what was going to happen, you know, with us. I tried to explain.
No, I understand. I'm just surprised, that's all.
I know what she's thinking just by looking at her. I can practically hear her exact thoughts. I've been talking to my mum a little lately. It sounds weird coming from my mouth, and it was even weirder to have finally picked up the phone when my mum called. I had been avoiding her until 2 weeks ago. I haven't exactly forgiven her, but I'm sort of working on trying not to be so angry about the whole mess. It doesn't get me anywhere.
You have? Harden, that is so great to hear.
Her frown is gone, and she's smiling so brightly at me that my chest literally fucking aches from the beauty of it. Yeah, a little. I shrug my shoulders. She is still smiling at me like I've just told her she won the damn lottery.
I'm so happy that everything is working out for you. You deserve everything good in your life.
I'm not sure what to say to that, but I've missed her kindness so much that I can't stop myself from reaching for her arm and pulling her into a hug. Her arms move to my shoulders, and her head drops down to my chest. I swear that a sigh escapes her lips. If I'm wrong, I'll just pretend it was so.
Harden!
Someone calls, and Tessa pulls away to stand next to me. Her cheeks are flushed, and she looks nervous again. Luke approaches with Casey, a bouquet of flowers in his hand.
I know you didn't bring me fucking flowers.
I groan, knowing that it must have been his woman's idea. Tessa stands at my side, staring wide-eyed at Luke and the short brunette at his side.
You know it, and I know how much you love lilies,
Luke says, shit-talking while Casey waves to Tessa. Tessa turns to me, confused, but smiling the most beautiful smile I've seen in the last 2 months.
It's so nice to finally meet you.
Casey wraps her arms around Tessa's body, and Luke tries to shove the hideous bouquet into my chest. I let the flowers fall to the floor, and he curses at me as we watch a horde of way too proud parents trample over them in passing.
I'm Casey, Harden's friend. I've heard so much about you, Tessa.
The woman withdraws a little to tuck one arm into Tessa's, and I'm a little surprised when Tessa smiles back and, instead of looking to me for help, jumps into a conversation about wasted flowers.
Harden seems like a flower type of guy, right?
Casey says, laughing, and Tessa giggles along.
That's why he got those ridiculous leaves tattooed on him.
Tessa raises a questioning brow.
Leaves?
They aren't exactly leaves. She's just giving me shit. But I did get a few new tattoos since I've seen you. I'm not sure why I feel slightly guilty about that, but I do.
Oh.
Tessa tries to smile, but I can tell it's not authentic.
That's good.
The mood has shifted into slightly awkward territory, and as Luke tells Tessa about the new tattoos across the bottom of my stomach, he makes a big mistake.
I told him not to get them. The four of us were out, and Casey got curious about Harden's tattoos and decided she wanted one.
Four?
Tessa blurts the word, and I can see the regret in her eyes when she asks. I glare at Luke at the same time that Casey digs her elbow into his side.
Casey's sister,
Luke tells Tessa, trying to fix his fuck-up, but making it worse. The first time I hung out with Luke, we met Casey for dinner. That weekend, we went to a movie, and Casey brought her sister along. A few hangouts later, I realized that the woman was sporting a little infatuation and told them to call her off. I didn't, and still don't want or need a distraction while waiting for Tessa to come back to me.
Oh.
Tessa gives Luke her fake smile and stares off into the crowd.
Fuck. I hate the look on her face right now.
Before I can tell Luke and Casey to fuck off and explain this shit to Tessa, Ken approaches and says,
Harden, I have someone I would like you to meet.
Luke and Casey excuse themselves, and Tessa steps to the side. I reach for her, but she brushes me off.
I need to find a restroom anyway.
She smiles and walks away after a quick hello to my father.
This is Chris, the man I was telling you about. He's head of publishing out at GABA in Chicago, and he came all the way here to talk to you.
Ken smiles wide and grips this guy's shoulder, but I can't help but look for Tessa in the crowd.
Yeah, thanks.
I shake the short man's hand, and he launches into conversation. Between wondering what kind of shit Ken had to pull to get this guy here, and worrying that Tessa won't find the bathroom, I barely catch half of his offer. Afterward, wandering around to every bathroom and calling her phone twice, I realize that Tessa has left without saying goodbye.
Chapter 66. Tessa, September. Landon's apartment is small and the closet space almost non-existent, but it works for him. Well, us. Every time I remind Landon that this is his apartment, not mine, he reminds me that I am living here now, in this apartment, in New York City.
You're sure you're okay, right? Remember, Sophia said you could stay with her for the weekend if you aren't comfortable.
he says, placing a stack of clean folded towels into the cubbyhole he calls a closet. I nod at him, disguising my burning anxiety at the weekend ahead. It's okay, really. I have to work most of the weekend anyway. It's the second Friday in September, and Hardin's flight will be landing any minute. I didn't ask why he was coming. I couldn't bring myself to. And when Landon awkwardly brought up his wanting to stay here, I just nodded and forced a smile.
He's taking a cab from Newark, so he'll be here in about an hour, given the traffic.
Landon rubs his hand over his chin before burying his face in his hands.
I feel like this isn't going to go well. I shouldn't have agreed to it.
I reach up and pull his hands away from his face. It's fine. I'm a big girl. I can handle a little Hardin Scott, I tease. I'm nervous as heck, but the comfort of work and knowing that Sophia is just down the block will get me through the weekend.
Will you know who be around this weekend? I don't know how that will go over.
Landon looks panicked, like he is going to cry or scream at any moment. No, he works all weekend too. I walk over to the couch and lift my apron from the pile of clean clothes. Living with Landon is easy, despite his recent relationship problems, and he loves to clean, so we get along well that way. Our friendship bounced back quickly, and we haven't had an awkward moment since I arrived 4 weeks ago. I spent the summer with my mother, her boyfriend David, and his daughter Heather. I even learned to Skype with Landon and spent my days planning for the move. It was one of those summers where you fall asleep on a June night and wake up to an August morning. It went too quickly, and a lot of my time was spent being reminded of Hardin. David rented a cabin for a week during July, and we ended up less than 5 miles away from the Scott cabin, and I saw that little bar we got far too drunk in when we were driving around. I walked down the same streets, this time with David's daughter, and she stopped at every block to pick a flower for me. We ate at the same restaurant where I had one of the most tense nights of my life, and we even had the same server, Robert. I was surprised when he told me that he too was moving to New York for medical school. He was offered a significantly larger grant to attend New York University than his previous choice in Seattle, so he was going with that. We exchanged phone numbers and text messaged during the summer, and we both moved to the city around the same time. He arrived a week before me, and now he works at the same place that I do. He also works almost as much as me for the next 2 weeks until he starts school full-time. I would be doing the same, but unfortunately, I was too late to get into the fall semester at NYU. Ken advised me to wait it out, at least until the spring semester before attending another college. He said that I shouldn't bounce back and forth again, it would only muddy my transcripts, and New York University is picky as it is. I'm okay with taking a break, despite that I will have to work harder to catch up, because I'm going to use the time working and experiencing this sprawling and bizarre city. Hardin and I have only spoken a few times since he left his graduation without saying goodbye to me. He texted me a few times here and there, and has sent some emails which were stiff, awkward, and formal, so I only responded to a few of them. "Do you guys have any plans for the weekend?" I ask Landon, while tying the strings of my apron around my waist.
"Not that I know of. I think he's just sleeping here and leaving Monday afternoon."
"Okay. I am working a double shift today, so don't wait up for me. I won't be home until at least 2. Landon sighs.
"I really wish you wouldn't work so much. You don't have to help pay anything. I got enough money from grants, and you know Ken refuses to let me pay for much anyway."
I give Landon my sweetest smile and pull my hair back into a low ponytail, resting just above the collar of my black button-up shirt. "I won't go over this with you again." I shake my head and tuck my shirt into my work pants. My work uniform isn't too bad. A black button-up, black pants, and black shoes. The only part of the ensemble that bothers me is the neon green tie I have to wear. It took me 2 weeks to get used to the look, but I was so grateful that Sophia got me a waitressing job at such an upscale restaurant that the color of the tie didn't matter. She's the head pastry chef at Lookout, a newly opened and highly overpriced modern restaurant in Manhattan. I stay out of her and Landon's friendship, especially after meeting her roommates, one of whom I had already met back in Washington. Landon and I seem to have the same sort of it's a really, really small world luck.
"Text me when you're off, then."
Landon reaches for my keys on the hook and places them into my hand. I agree, assuring him that Hardin's arrival isn't going to upset me, and with that, I leave for work. I don't mind the 20-minute walk each way. I am still learning my way through this massive city, and each time I get lost in the crowds of busy people, somehow I feel more connected to its vibe. The noise of the streets, the constant voices, sirens, and blaring horns only kept me up for the first week. Now it's almost calming the way I just sort of blend into the masses. People watching in New York is unlike anything else I've ever experienced. Everyone seems so important, so official, and I love guessing at people's life stories, where they came from, why they are here. I don't know how long I plan to stay here, not permanently, but I like it here for now. I miss him, though, so much. Stop this. I need to stop thinking this way. I'm happy now, and he has clearly made a life for himself that doesn't involve me. I'm okay with that. I just want him to be happy, that's all. I loved seeing him with his new friends at his graduation. I loved the way he was so collected, so happy. I just hated the way he walked off when I took too long coming back from the restroom. I'd left my phone on the counter by the sink, but when I remembered it and returned, it was already gone. Then I'd spent a half hour trying to find the lost and found, or a guard to help me find it. Eventually, I saw it sitting on a trash can, like someone realized it wasn't theirs, but didn't bother to put it back where they found it. In any event, the battery was already dead. I tried to find Hardin at the spot where I'd left him, but he was gone. Ken said he'd left with his friends, and something clicked then, that this was over. It was really over. Do I wish he would have come back for me? Of course. But he didn't, and I can't live my life wishing that he did. I purposely picked up extra shifts this weekend, wanting to keep myself as busy as possible and keep my time at the apartment to a minimum. Due to the tension and bickering between Sophia and her roommates, I am going to try my hardest to avoid staying there, but I certainly will if things are too awkward with Hardin. Sophia and I have become closer, but I try not to pry too much. I am too biased due to my friendship with Landon, and I don't think I want to hear the details, especially if she started to feel comfortable talking to me about sex with him. I shudder, thinking about Kimberly's revelations about sweet, reserved Trevor's escapades in the office. 2 blocks from Lookout, I look down at my phone to check the time and nearly walk straight into Robert. His hands reach out and stop me before I collide with him.
"Look out,"
he says lamely, and chuckles while I groan.
"See, it's hilarious because we work at Lookout and...
He smiles and adjusts his own lime-green tie comically. The tie looks much better on him than it does on me, with his blonde hair messy and sticking straight up in some places. I debate whether to remind him about Hardin, but stay silent while we cross the street with a group of teenage girls, all giggling and smiling at him. I don't blame them. He's handsome. Just a little distracted, I finally admit as we turn the corner.
He's coming today, right?
Robert holds the door open for me, and I step into the darkly lit restaurant. The inside of Lookout is so dark that it takes a few seconds for my eyes to adjust to the difference whenever I walk inside from a sunny afternoon, and even now, though it's barely noon. I follow him back to the break room where I store my purse in a small locker, and he slides his cell phone onto the top shelf. Yes. I close the door to the locker and lean my back against it. Robert reaches his hand out to touch my elbow.
You know I'm okay with you talking about him to me. I don't exactly love the guy, but you can talk to me about anything.
I know. I sigh. I appreciate that so much. I just don't think it's a good idea to open that drawer. I've had it closed too long. I laugh and hope that it comes out more authentic than it feels. I lead the way out of the break room and Robert follows close behind. He smiles and looks up at the clock on the wall. If it weren't glowing red with deep blue numbers, I don't think I would be able to read the time in the hallway. The hallways are the darkest part of the restaurant, and the kitchen and the break room are the only areas that have standard lighting. My shift begins normally, and the hours tick by quickly as the lunch crowd leaves and the dinner crowd begins to pour in. I've gotten myself to the point where I have almost been able to forget about Hardin's arrival for 5 minutes straight, when Robert walks over with a worried look on his face.
They're here. Landon and Hardin.
Robert's hands grab the hem of his apron and he wipes the cloth across his forehead.
They're requesting your section.
I don't panic the way I had assumed that I would. Instead, I simply nod and work my way toward the entrance and search for Landon. I force my eyes to only search for Landon and his plaid shirt, not Hardin. Nervously, I glance around the area, looking over face after face. None of them Landon's.
Tess.
A hand touches my arm, and I jump back. It's that voice. That deep, beautiful, accented voice that I have played in my head for months and months.
Tessa?
Harden touches me again. This time, his hand wraps around my wrist, the way it always used to. I don't want to turn and face him. Well, I do, but I'm terrified. I'm terrified to see him, to see the face that has been permanently branded into my mind, never to be altered or diluted by time the way I had assumed it would be. His face, grumpy and ever frowning, will always be as vivid as the first time I saw him. I quickly snap out of my trance and turn around. In the mere seconds that I have to plan, I try to focus on finding Landon's eyes before Harden's, but what's the use? It's impossible to miss those eyes, those gorgeous green eyes that could never be duplicated. Harden smiles at me and I stand there, unable to speak for a few seconds. I need to get it together.
Hi,
he says. Hi.
Harden wanted to come here.
I hear Landon's voice, but my eyes don't seem to want to cooperate with my mind. Harden is staring at me just the same, his fingers still pressing against the skin on my wrist. I should pull away before the pounding of my pulse betrays my reaction to seeing him after 3 months.
We don't have to stay and eat here if you are busy,
Landon adds. No, it's okay, really, I assure my best friend. I know what he's thinking. I know he feels guilty and worried that bringing Harden here will ruin the new Tessa. The Tessa who laughs and makes jokes. The Tessa who has become her own person, maybe even stubbornly so. That won't happen, though. I have myself in check, under control, totally cool and collected. Totally. I gently pull my wrist from Harden's soft grip and grab 2 menus from the board. I nod to the confused hostess, Kelsey, letting her know I'll be taking these 2 to their table.
How long have you worked here?
Harden asks, walking with me. He's dressed the same way he always was. Same black t-shirt, same pair of boots, same tight black jeans, though this pair has a small tear at the knee. I have to keep reminding myself that it has only been a few months since I left for my mother's house. It feels like so much more time has passed. Years, even. Only 3 weeks, I say.
Landon said you've been here since noon today?
I nod. I gesture to a small booth against the back wall, and Harden slides in on one side and Landon on the other.
When will you get off?
Get off? Is he making an innuendo? I can't tell after all this time. Do I want him to? I can't tell that either. We close at 1, so I usually get home around 2 when I work a closing shift.
2 in the morning?
His mouth drops open dramatically. I set the menus in front of the 2 men, and Harden reaches for my wrist again. I pull back this time, pretending not to notice his intentions.
Yes, in the morning. She works like this every day, almost.
Landon says. I shoot him a glare, wishing he would have kept that to himself, then wonder why I feel that way. It shouldn't matter to Harden how many hours I spend here. Harden doesn't say much after that. He just stares at the menu, points to the lamb ravioli, and orders a water. Landon orders his usual, asking if Sophia is busy in the kitchen, and gives me more I'm sorry smiles than necessary. My next table keeps me busy. The woman is drunk and can't decide what she wants to eat. Her husband is too busy on his phone to pay attention. I'm actually grateful for the drunk wife sending her food back 3 times. It makes it easier to only stop by Landon and Harden's table once to fill their drinks and once to clear their plates. Sophia being Sophia, she wrote off their tab. Harden being Harden, he left me a ridiculous tip. And me being me, I forced Landon to take it and return it to Harden when they got back to the apartment.
Chapter 67. Harden. I curse when I step on something plastic, but not too loudly, since I'm sure you can hear everything in this apartment. An apartment that, having few windows, is entirely too dark to see shit. And here I am, trying to remember the way back to the couch from the minuscule bathroom. This is what I get for drinking all that water at the restaurant in the hopes that Tessa would have to stop by more often. It didn't work, and another server ended up filling up my glass several times. It did, however, make me have to piss all night long. Sleeping on the couch while knowing Tessa's closet-like room is empty drives me fucking crazy. I hate the idea of her walking through the city alone in the middle of the damn night. I scolded Landon for giving her the tiniest of the two bedrooms, but he swears that Tessa won't allow him to change the arrangement. Go figure. It doesn't surprise me that she's still as stubborn as she has always been. Another example of this. She works until 2 in the morning and walks home alone. I should have thought about this sooner. I should have been waiting outside that ridiculous establishment to walk her home. Grabbing my phone from the couch, I check the time. It's only 1 now. I can take a cab and get there in less than 5 minutes. 15 minutes later, thanks to the near impossibility of catching a cab on a Friday night, I guess, I'm standing outside Tessa's workplace, waiting for her. I should text her, but I don't want to give her the chance to tell me no, especially since I'm already here. People pass on the streets, mostly men, which only increases my anxiety about her leaving work alone at such a late hour. While analyzing her safety, I hear laughter. Her laughter. The doors to the restaurant open and she walks out, laughing and covering her mouth with her hand. A man is next to her, holding the door for her. He looks familiar. Too familiar. Who the hell is this guy? I swear I've seen him before, but I can't remember. The server. The server from that place up by the cabin. How the hell is that possible? What the hell is this guy doing in New York? Tessa leans into him, still laughing, and as I take a step forward out of the dark, her eyes meet mine immediately.
Harden! What are you doing?
She exclaims loudly.
You scared the crap out of me!
I look at him, then at her. Months of working out to relieve anger, months of talking shit with Dr. Tran to control my emotions, haven't prepared me, and never could, for this. I have had small thoughts about Tessa's having a boyfriend, but I wasn't expecting or prepared to actually have to deal with it. As nonchalantly as I can manage, I shrug and say, I came to make sure you got home okay. Tessa and the guy share a look, before he nods and shrugs his shoulders. Text me when you get home, he says, brushing his hand across hers as he departs. Tessa watches him go, then turns to me with a not unpleasant smile. I'll hail a cab, I say, still talking myself down internally. What did I think? That she would still be figuring shit out? Yeah, I guess I did.
I usually walk.
You walk? Alone? I regret asking the second part of that question the moment it leaves my fucking mouth. After a beat, I conclude, he walks you home. She winces.
Only the shifts we work together.
How long have you been dating him?
What?
She stops us before we even make it around the corner.
We aren't dating.
She creases her brows. Seems like it. I shrug, trying my fucking hardest not to be a sulking asshole about it.
We aren't. We spend time together, but I'm not dating at all.
Looking at her, I try to determine if she's telling the truth. He wants to, the way he touched your hand.
Well, I don't. Not yet.
She stares down at her feet while we cross the street. There aren't nearly as many people out as earlier today, but the streets are still far from empty. Not yet. You haven't dated anyone. I watch a fruit vendor pack up for the night, while praying for the answer that I want to hear.
No, I don't intend to date for a while.
I feel her eyes on me when she adds,
Are you? Dating anyone, I mean.
The relief I feel to find out that she hasn't been dating is beyond words. I turn and smile at her. No, I don't date. I hope she catches my joke. And she does smile.
I've heard that before.
I'm a conservative guy, remember?
She laughs but doesn't add any commentary as we stroll block after block. I need to talk to her about walking home this late. I've spent night after night, week after week, trying to imagine how she's living her life here. Her working long days as a waitress and wandering home in the darkness of New York City was not something that crossed my mind. Why are you working in a restaurant?
Sophia got me the job. It's a really nice place, and I make more money than you would think.
More money than you would advance? I ask her, knowing the answer.
I don't mind it. It keeps me busy.
Vance told me you didn't even ask for a recommendation. And you know he's planning on opening something here, too. She is staring down the street now, mindlessly gazing into traffic.
I know, but I want to do something on my own. I like my job, for now, until I can get into NYU.
You haven't gotten into NYU yet, I exclaim, unable to hide my surprise.
Why hasn't anyone told me any of this?
I force Landon to give me updates on Tessa's life, but apparently he likes to leave out the important shit.
No, but I am hoping for the spring semester.
She reaches her hand into her bag and pulls out a set of keys.
The deadlines had all passed.
You're okay with that? I'm surprised by the calm in her voice.
Yeah, I'm only 19. It will be fine.
She shrugs, and I think my heart stops.
It's not ideal, but I have time to make up for it.